This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Trees are extremely beneficial to the city, to your home, and to your health. And now it's time to return the favor. Over the summer months, temperatures in the San Antonio area frequently hit over 100 degrees, and now your chance, it's the chance for the trees to recover. And maybe you've got that tree in that yard that didn't survive this summer. I'm sorry to hear about that, but what to do next? What would be a good tree to plant there, and when should you do it? We're talking about trees today. We want to hear from you. If you've got questions or comments, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org, tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined by Mark Bird, arborist with the City of San Antonio, and Mark Cozy. He is a regional community forester for Texas A&M Forest Service, and Ross Hosea is the forester for the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department. Welcome, all of you. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here.
So how bad was it? Ross, how bad was the summer for trees? Do they take it on the chin during these summer months?
Yeah, we did find that there was a bit of stress on the trees, especially late in the year. It was kind of an odd year in that we had great favorable conditions during the spring and early summer. It was very, the temperatures were low and lots of moisture, and so the trees put on a lot of growth throughout the city. And then all of a sudden the tap was turned off and the heat was turned up. And what we find is those trees put on a lot of resources that were then under stress. And so we did see some. Haven't seen really any losses. It's nothing like we've experienced in past years, you know, in the early 2010s area where we had lots of tree mortality. But we did see a lot of stress throughout the city. A lot of people had.
So, Mark Bird, some trees will have what they call a dieback. Is that true?
That is. And that's just a response to the fact that, as Ross said, the tap was turned off, the rain stopped coming, and the temperatures went up. They will shed leaves in order to manage that moisture loss. When they're not able to pull up enough moisture from the soil, they'll shed leaves. You'll have a certain amount of root dieback as well. Again, the soils dry out. So there's a lot of back and forth, and that adds to the stress of the trees during these brutal conditions we have to grow in.
And Mark Cruzy, when there's tree dieback, but then sometimes they just defoliate and it's not really a dead branch. You got to make sure before you go crazy with your trimming equipment, right?
Exactly. A good rule of thumb is that if the branch is under direct sunlight, so if it was like in the upper part of the crown, it had full sunlight and that branch died, that could kind of imply that the tree's under some stress. If it's a branch maybe that was shaded in the lower canopy, that could imply that maybe it got shaded up by some above branches above that.
And so now the conditions are not so harsh. You might start seeing some leaves sprouting on those leaves, on those branches. And so leave that alone, right?
Exactly. Yes. The tree typically will tell you what to prune, what not to prune. So usually dead branches are a very good starting point to prune.
Okay, so people can go pruning overboard a little bit. Mark Bird, what's the good rule of thumb? Is now a good time to prune, and what do you prune?
So proper pruning can be done most times of the year, proper pruning. And you don't want to take off too much live tissue. You don't want to remove leaves. Leaves produce the food for the trees. If they don't have leaves, they can't produce the food that they need to go through these stressful periods. Each cut that you make is a wound on the tree that uses resources. So if you're stressing a tree out by removing too much leaf mass, you're making a wound, it's got to heal, it's going to trigger other growth responses. It feels like it's got to restore that lost canopy. So proper pruning, selective, prune only what you need to, provide that clearances, clean up some of the dead wood, but don't strip your trees out. I think that's one of the biggest problems we see, people just stripping out all of the internal branch structure and all of the leaf mass inside. Oh, I've got to get more light for my grass. The tree is the most important growing, giving back organism on your property or in our community. So,
okay, and you wanted to add to that? Ross?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that we commonly see a lot of times in San Antonio is a practice known as topping, where people go in and
they just... the crepe myrtles.
Yeah, it's commonly done on crepe myrtles. You see it done on ash trees, pecan trees. And it's where the homeowner or a contractor goes in and just takes basically the top of the half of the tree off. It's not just a San Antonio problem. It happens worldwide, but it is very harmful to the trees. It basically takes all their resources off and forces them to put new shoots. And the reason it's commonly done on a lot of those trees is simply because it survives it, because it tolerates it. But long term, it's not good for the tree. Those sprouts that result are weak. They commonly fail over time, and you just get advanced decay and fungal activity in the tree, and it just leads to a quicker decline of the tree. So it's
but
a recommendation.
You see it, people giving their crepe myrtles these crew cuts, just right off the top, taking off all of that growth. And what do they think they're doing when they do that? Any ideas?
I mean, yeah, I think a lot of people are motivated because they think they're going to get new sprouts, so they're going to get more flower production. Generally, with crepe myrtles, what we recommend is if they're planted in the right place where they have room to grow, just let them grow like you would any other tree and get to the size. Crepe myrtles come in a lot of varieties. You can get them as small as 2 feet tall, and you can get them as big as 30, 35 feet tall. And so as long as you're getting sunlight, you're going to get good flower production. So we don't recommend just that continual topping, cutting back to the same knuckle year after year after year.
But the shoots that may come off the sides of the base of the crepe myrtle, should I trim those out?
Generally speaking, yeah, we'll trim those out so that we're not getting conflicts later on where the limbs are rubbing on one another.
I'm going to take a call, and then Chris is on the line. And Chris, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. We're talking trees.
Hey, guys. I hope that y'all can solve a marital spat that we're having. My wife loves the cedar trees on our 3 acres because it provides a little bit of buffer for neighbors and whatnot. And I was part of a land development with Caterpillar and Texas Land Commission years ago, in which they did a study where they removed cedar trees to see the production or the reacclimation of water for the live oaks. And based upon that, my experience has been get rid of as many cedar trees as you can so that the rest of your good trees like live oaks can prosper. I was hoping that science is solid, so that I can tell my wife I'm clear to go crazy with the chainsaw and cut down all of our cedar trees.
Okay, Mark Cruzy is a regional community forester with Texas A&M Forest Service. So, Chris, thanks for the call, and what do you say?
All right, so a good rule of thumb that we like to say is when you get to a land, if you own it or you're about to buy it, spend at least 1 year before you do any major site disturbance to it. So get to know that land, get to know where it floods, where certain properties of that land that are valuable that you don't want to impact them too greatly. So when you remove acres and acres of trees, you can have a large impact on the biota. So other plants in the understory around those cedar trees, you could also impact the animals on that site. You could also impact the flooding. So if you remove the ash juniper, which actually have pretty incredible leaf area index, we call that. So when it does rain, most of the moisture on a 2-inch rainfall or less will actually be trapped up in the crown of the tree. So you can significantly reduce the amount of storm water on your site. So
be careful. Don't go crazy killing all the all the cedar trees, right?
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We've got more questions coming in. 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the giants of nature, the trees, and how we're going to take care of them and how we can we need more. Everyone should go out and plant a tree if you got some space in your yard. And what tree should you plant? Well, we got our experts here, and we'll see what they say about that. But first, let's get back to the phones. Number is 210-614-8980 with Alex. And Alex, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a tree that was rotted and big branches were falling from it. So I went over there with a chainsaw, cut it down, and now I have a stump there and I have a bunch of brush and the tree in a pile. So I want to see what I could do with the stump, what I could plant in that area, and what do I do with all the brush and the tree, that who could pick that up, what would be some good options. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Alex, thank you for that. So let's go to Mark Bird, talk about brush pickup, first of all, right?
So if you're in the city of San Antonio, twice a year there is a brush collection cycle, and they are just starting that. I got my card this past week saying the brush collection is coming. I just want everybody to know, too, just because the brush collection season is here and you get your card, it doesn't mean you have to prune your trees. Just because somebody knocks on the door and says, hey, I'm going to prune your trees for you, you want to make sure they've got their city issued license, that with a valid license they have general liability insurance for your protection, so you want to make sure that you ask for that when they're knocking on your door. Getting back to your stump, Alex, try to cut the stump as flush as you can. If you're in the city, just wait. In the next few weeks, you'll probably be getting a card letting them know that, letting you know that it's time to put your brush out on the street. As far as what's a great tree, we highly recommend trees that are adapted to our area if they're not native. If you're looking for a space to fill in large trees, we recommend, if you haven't been to the CPS site on their Green Shade Tree Rebate Program, you can earn a $50 rebate if you purchase a tree that's on the approved list. It's a rebate. You got to fill out the application, have a receipt for the tree you purchase. This is an excellent time of the year to plant trees. We celebrate Arbor Day in November because we want to encourage people to plant trees. So look at the CPS Green Shade Rebate site. Take advantage of that rebate, and there'll be a list of great trees that are very adapted to our area to plant.
So Ross Hosea, with your forester for the City of San Antonio Parks and Recreation Department, I've heard that if you can plant a tree next to a stump, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's perfectly okay. Everyone wants to put it right back in the same spot, and that can be problematic sometimes because depending on the size of the tree, it's a lot of work to get rid of all of the old roots. It can be dug out. You can treat it with various things. You can also, you know, hire someone with a stump grinder or rent one and remove it. But a lot of times it's easier to cut it, like Mark said, cut it as low as possible, set over to the side. It's not going to hurt it at all. It's going to develop around it. And it'll be perfectly suited to right in that same spot.
All right. We got a call here from Brenda. And Brenda, thanks for calling in. And go ahead with your question.
Hi. I used to live in Austin, and I would go and visit Treaty Oak. And I was wondering, what's the oldest tree in San Antonio, and where's it located?
Okay. That's a great question. I'd love to know the answer.
So I don't think that we have any record of the oldest tree in San Antonio. I know people look at the big trees on the Riverwalk and are amazed at how large they are. But we know that those trees were planted whenever the Riverwalk was being developed. And I think if you look around our community, that a lot of the trees, even the biggest ones, have been planted. So when we age trees, a lot of times we'll base it on the age of a neighborhood and an area where those trees are and make that determination. And there's some that we know are beyond that. As a matter of fact, Mark Cruzy assisted in doing some tree measuring over by the IGO library. And tell us about that tree.
Yeah, that's a great question. So what's really unique about trees is that they'll live intergenerational. So the tree that, you know, our great 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 grandfather way back in the past planted could be something that we actually enjoy the shade of. So some of the trees, general rule of thumb that we say for Central Texas is bald cypress will be probably our longest lived tree, probably 1,000 years old. Some trees could be with live oak. 325 years is a pretty good number for some of the live oaks in our area for how long they've been around.
Is there any particular tree in San Antonio that has a historic value to it? Like, this is a historic tree? I mean, you know, like I've heard people say that was a hanging tree, you know, and it.
So we have the sniper tree on the Riverwalk, and there are pictures that date pre-development of the San Antonio River, the Ben Milam cypress, and the legend has it that a sniper was in that tree and shot Ben Milam. We have in our Texas historic trees, we have a tree over in Pecan Valley, the Burning Oak, which is listed in the state registry. So we do have the IGO Library tree is one that we're going to be looking at to put on the Historic Tree Coalition list and look to give other recognition to trees around the city, especially those old legacy trees we people know about.
All right. So let's get on. Let's go with Jaime or Jamie. Jamie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have three Canary Island Palm Island trees that were salvaged. Somebody gifted them to me and planted them last September, well, almost a year ago. But now they look sad, chlorotic. So I wanted to know what I could feed them, how much should I be watering them, and what can I expect?
All right, so these are palm trees, and they're not doing too well. So who would be good to... So let's go with Mark Cruzy. Do you know anything about palm trees?
So that's a good question. So the Canary Island date palm, they do okay in San Antonio, and typically we'll see them decline as they get bigger and older. Unfortunately, we don't have the same conditions they have in the Italy and the Mediterranean where they're more native to. So typically what you could look at doing with the Canary Island date palm is you can inject them with some nutrients and sort of give them a good shot in the arm. So I would look into that. So it would be something we call a stem injection on Canary Island date palm.
Okay, and Ross?
Yeah, and so that Canary Island date palm that we have, we've have several on city property, and we've seen decline in them over the time. There is a particular disease that they're susceptible to called Texas Phoenix Palm Decline. We know it as TPPD, and it's pretty detrimental on them. It can be prevented or treated through injections, like Mark is talking about, once it gets it. But if you're having some issues that you definitely see it starting to decline, I would strongly urge you to reach out to a professional arborist that can come in and give you some recommendations and how to take care of that.
So if you're thinking about planting a tree, where would a palm tree, is that, you know... Is that one that you would consider, you know?
Generally speaking, no. Generally speaking, we would prefer to go with trees that are more native. There are certain palms that do well in San Antonio. There's the Washingtonia palm, which is common, the sable palm. Those, if you're going to plant a palm, those are probably the ones I would recommend. They're the most hardy for San Antonio. But they're not going to provide the long-term benefits that a lot of our native trees, our oaks, our elms, and the such that are going to provide for
it
the environment.
It seems like there are some neighborhoods where there are a lot of palm trees. And was that just because that was a fad at that time when those areas were developed?
Yeah, I think it's more of a design issue. So you see like Woodlawn Avenue and some of those areas where the streets are lined. It's more an aesthetic thing, and it may have been a fad back then. In the city, we are no longer planting lots of palms. We may on a one-off case here and there, but not on a regular basis.
Okay, let's go to caller, and the number is 210-614-8980 with RJ. RJ, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I don't want to get off the subject here. I just took my two-year-old to the big tree down in Goose Island. That thing was an acorn 1,000 years ago. And again, the oak trees here in San Antonio, there's some gorgeous oak trees down in Patterson Avenue. They're at the headwaters of the San Antonio River. And something else I had was weed eating around trees with edgers and weed eaters, and see folks going around taking a full throttle and scarring the bottoms of the trees. I'll take my question off air.
All right. Thanks for that, RJ. Mark Bird, what are some of the do's and don'ts for weed eating and around trees?
Don't weed eat around trees. put a nice bed of mulch, properly mulch your tree to try to keep those weeds down. There is nothing more damaging than impacting that tissue, that conductive tissue, that low on the tree.
So the bark is the like the circulatory system of the tree, right?
Well, the bark is the protective layer, and once you beat it with the string, right underneath that, you have your xylem and phloem. Let's not get too technical, but yes, the veins that move the fluids up and down, and the bark is meant to protect the tree from that kind of, you know, not from string trimmer impact, but just nature in general. So a good layer of mulch, no more than 2, maybe 3 inches of mulch. Don't pile it against the trunk. We see lots of volcano mulching where they're just piling it up, and we're not sure who started that, if it was, I think, another design thing that came in, somebody said, and then we see it done on one site, and my neighbor does it, and so I have to do it, and it's not proper mulching.
There, so it's towering the mulch up into the up the side of the...
just piling it against the trunk.
And that's drowning the tree.
And what that does, it holds moisture against the tree. It increases decay. It allows organisms that shouldn't be feeding on that tissue to dwell and thrive.
So what you should do is crater around the the tree.
Make a well around the trunk of the tree.
Okay, another caller. Let's go, Patrick. And Patrick, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. We have a grapefruit tree in our patio that outgrew its pot. It broke a big clay pot, and quite a large tree. And its root dug through the patio concrete and looking for our soil. We had to cut the root and, move the tree, but now it's lost all its leaves. I wonder if there's anything we can do to save it.
Did you ever get any grapefruit off it?
We did. We did get a couple of grapefruit off of it so far.
All right.
And they were great.
Okay, so and Ross?
Yeah, so this is common. A lot of people put fruit trees in containers, and certain ones, especially citrus, work well.
So you can bring it inside during the freeze.
Correct. You can move it around, but oftentimes, and grapefruit's one of those that gets really big and it's very tolerant sometimes in our area. And so what will happen is they will outgrow the pot. And so what you did was, it's kind of two evils there, right? You either leave it in the pot and it's going to eventually die because of root volume, or now you have to cut those roots and try to get it in the ground. It's probably going through, from what you're describing, it's probably going through shock. I don't know when that root was cut, but this would be the time of year to try to correct any actions, to get it in the ground, to get it completely out of the pot, to look for girdling roots, roots that are circling around that pot, trying to get those cut. Roots are just like stems on a tree. Wherever you make a cut, they will resprout. So where you see that root bend and starting to turn and go around in a circle where that pot used to be, that's where you would want to make a cut. Again, you may have to take more off. That's going to be detrimental to the tree. It may not survive it, but if you don't do these steps, it's not going to survive it anyway.
And can you plant it out into the ground?
That's correct. That's correct. I'm not sure how big this tree is. Obviously, it can get so big that it's just...
Well, what about the freeze? The freezes.
Yeah, so it's best. It's an established tree, so it's probably going to be able to handle the freeze a little bit better because it's established. It doesn't sound like it's a young, brand new tree. But trying to get into a spot that's got a little bit of shelter from the north wind. So if it's up near a building or closer to a building where it can get some heat off of that, just trying to find it in a more sheltered area, or maybe where it's got some tree cover to one side that's going to protect it from those cold winds.
All right, we're taking a break. We're talking about trees in San Antonio. How do you treat your trees? What can you do? What tree would be good to plant in your yard? If you've got a question, give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This word is continues after this.
Artist Carlos Almaraz has been compared to Degas and Monet, but imagine those impressionists as Chicanos with their works exploding with color and movement.
And it was floor to ceiling masterpieces of every type of art and phantasma.
Almaraz is the subject of a new documentary. We'll hear about it next time on Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about trees. Arbor Day is coming up. It's November 2nd here in San Antonio. Is that like the Arbor Day, or is that just for here? What is up going up with Arbor Day?
Arbor Day is recognized nationally. Generally, nationally, it's held in the spring, but in Texas, we know that the best time to plant trees is in the fall. So we have moved Arbor Day in Texas. Texas recognizes it.
Transplanted it.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. We've moved it. And it does vary from state to state, depending on their conditions. But in Texas, we celebrate it the first Friday of November. And so that's the time that we just like to set aside and recognize just the value and the benefits that we get from trees. In San Antonio, we celebrated the day after, so that this coming on Saturday, November 2nd, in a couple weeks, we have a really large celebration planned at Olmos Basin Park off of Divine Road, and we invite the public to come out. It's going to have lots of kid-friendly activities and lots of just fun stuff just to talk about all the good things that trees provide.
Yeah, trees, they give us so much. They hold up piñatas and all other great things. We have to make sure that we recognize everything that trees do for us. You wanted to mention that what they do for our health. Talk about that a little bit. Mark Cruzy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's been a very new line of research, is the human health impacts of trees. So it's been proven or documented that people that live in neighborhoods with more tree canopy will have less heart attacks, less strokes, and lesser incidence of asthma in those neighborhoods. You're more prone, if you live in a community with lots of trees, to be outside more, to exercise more, to actually maybe know your neighbors a little better, because you're going to be out kind of walking the street, so to speak. So very, very, very important benefits of that. Another one that I like as well, especially in August and September, I'm not going to give away all my favorite spots, but the Texas persimmon, and that smaller native tree gives out some really amazing food. So there's important antioxidants, very important compounds that are found in some of our native fruit trees that are just really good for our human health.
All right, let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Jeff, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. We're talking trees.
Hi, I live in downtown in Alta Vista. I did plant a Mexican sycamore a year ago, which is doing great, but I'm looking to add a tree near my curb, but adjacent to a telephone pole. So it's about an 8-foot by 8-foot square area, but is there something that I could plant there that would make sense?
All right. Mark Bird is the arborist with the City of San Antonio. What do you say?
So you we're glad that you're trying to plant more trees in downtown area. That's really great. And we need to offset the loss of canopy and offset the different heat impacts that happen when you live in those areas. A small tree that can grow in that area might, I would direct toward the Mexican olive. And
an ornamental olive, right?
It's an ornamental. It's not an edible fruit that it produces, even though it can produce fruit. But it's one that blooms, puts out a beautiful white flower almost the whole summer long. There's still some blooming. I look out my window from my office, and they have really attracted the monarchs. So it seems like it's been a new addition into our tree planting palette, if you will, over the last few years. And when established, it's a beautiful tree all spring, all summer. It's deciduous, so it's going to lose its leaves. You can properly prune it, make sure you keep your sidewalks and your street clear. It can grow upright. It wants to kind of be a little bit of a bush. So that's a good one for that spot. Other tree to consider, maybe a Mexican plum. It's got a more upright form. It'll give you a beautiful bloom in the spring. I'm trying to think. Mark, Ross, you got any other suggestions for small space trees?
Yeah, all of those are great species. The main thing we would say is if you're planting anywhere around the power pole, the utility pole, is, you know, right tree for the right place. So making sure that we have something that's not going to get too big. Of course, we always stress before you dig any holes, calling 811, call before you dig to make sure there's no utilities, not going to have any issues.
Especially if you're near a pole like that.
Absolutely. Make sure we have proper setback distances so that we're not right up against it. Other trees that do well, that stay fairly small, of course, are the the beloved Texas mountain laurel, that's one that does really well here in our area that can do well. Mexican buckeye is one that will stay small that can work as well. So there's a whole host of them.
I've been seeing a lot of people raving about the Anacacho orchid tree. Do you know it? Or orchid tree?
Yeah, that's a very unique species, and it gets its name from the fact that the leaves actually look like a cow hoof. So they have a very beautiful pink flower. Well, I would recommend people to check out the Texas Tree Planting Guide. You'll find that at texastreeplanting.tamu.edu. And on that website, you can go through and you can really identify your site, what size of tree you want. Do you want a small tree, medium, or large? Do you have power lines? What kind of soil types? Is it very alkaline soil? Are you prone to drought? So you can go through there and you can really hone in on what species for your site.
Okay, we got a lot of callers. Let's try and blaze through here. Janet, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. My complaint is actually with the city. When they have brush pickup, anyone with a truck and a chainsaw roams our neighborhood. Sadly, they work cheaply and they get hired. They strip the trees and they don't paint for oak wilt. And it seems maybe the city could come up with another way of handling this.
Okay, Janet, thank you for that. And so this is really a consumer issue, right? So let's go to Mark Bird.
So thank you for the call. And there is a requirement that a contractor doing work in the city comes and gets a tree maintenance license.
And so you can ask for that. You got a tree maintenance license?
Anybody that's knocking on your door saying they're going to do tree work, you need to ask for their tree maintenance license. And I'd mentioned earlier, because it's brush pickup doesn't mean you have to prune your trees at brush collection time. And it's one thing to share with our neighbors. Let's share that good information with the neighbors to not prune your trees every time that it's brush collection, that the contractor doing the work, regardless of the price, there's good arborists out there. There are good tree people out there that know how to make proper cuts and know to paint the cuts. The city of San Antonio does have an oak wilt ordinance as well. It requires that all wounds on oak trees are painted, regardless of the time of the year. I know there's been some confusion about that, but we try to keep that ordinance very simple. Any wound on an oak tree that exposes sapwood shall be painted. So when you have those incidences, you can certainly report them to 311. That's the city information line. And provide as much information as you can. And we get out there, follow up on the contractor. We check for those oak wilt violations.
Let me go to Dave on the phones. And Dave, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. My question actually is about oak wilt. I'm in the Oakland Park neighborhood, north of 410 at Blanco and Northwest Military by Castle Hills. I had moved into this neighborhood because of the beautiful canopy of oak trees. These are legacy oaks that go back hundreds of years. We've had a scourge of oak wilt over the last 10 years, just moving like a wave across the neighborhood. It's taking out entire yards filled with oak trees. I know about painting, you know, the wounds and all, but our understanding is it travels underground with the beetles via the roots. Is there anything people can do if you're in a neighborhood with oak wilt moving through it that you can do to protect your trees if they've not been infected yet?
Thank you. Great call. Thank you for calling in, Dave, with that, because this is a big issue in San Antonio. This is putting at risk a major resource for San Antonio and Bexar County. So Mark Cruzy, Regional Community Forester for Texas A&M Forest Service, what do you recommend?
On oak wilt, it will move usually between 70 and 150 feet per year. So we really like to stay out in front of it at least 150 feet. And we really want to identify the symptomatic trees. So we typically will find old dead, we'll find new dead, and we'll find this kind of line of diseased trees. So they're basically showing symptoms. And from that line is really where you want to be at least 150 feet out. And you want to go in there and you can inject the trees with a fungicide. And this fungicide actually gets inside the tree and it actually will stay viable for a year, sometimes 2 years. And what it will do is once the fungus will move in through the actual tree, that fungus that would actually suppress the fungus. The issue with that is that your tree can survive and it can basically not show symptoms, and then that disease can move to your neighbor's tree, and your neighbor wouldn't really know to treat their tree because your tree didn't show symptoms. So it's a disease that really needs a lot of attention. And so we've got a couple really good resources that I want to point out to you are texasoakwilt.org. There's a listing of oak wilt certified arborists. Another group that I want to key you in on is going to be in San Antonio. We have our San Antonio Arborist Association as well. So there's a lot of arborists in there that are duly trained on oak wilt as well that can get out there and help you out.
So there are resources online to learn about that, but there are a lot of people promoting these types of recovery efforts for trees that have been hit by the wilt. Once you're showing signs that your tree has oak wilt, is there anything that can actually be done to save it? In 30 seconds, Ross, anything?
Yeah, so some people think you can fertilize or treat the tree just by making it healthy, and that's actually not going to help it. Once it gets that fungus, you're going to have to go through the fungicides and some of those treatments to be able to assist on recovery of that tree.
Right, and we're talking about a major resource, like our caller said, Bob, that this is something that we have to really identify and deal with as a community, because this is a citywide, countywide, regionwide problem. We're going to go back to break. The number is 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we're talking about trees in San Antonio. November 2nd is Arbor Day. We're going to be celebrating it here. Lots of events. We'll have some links to on our website, tpr.org. Quick question. Let's go to Michael on the phones, 210-614-8980. Michael, go ahead.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you all for all the amazing work that you do serving your community, number one. And then number two, I'd really like to know what your favorite species is.
All right, Michael, thank you for that. So let's go around the horn here. We'll start off with a Mark Bird. Tell us what your favorite species, what species would you recommend people plant?
Well, I have favorite species that I may not recommend planting just because of their uniqueness, and then I'll share my favorite species to plant. These days would probably be the Canby oak or Sierra oak. It's a tree that's been in our area for a few years. Actually several years. It's a northern Mexican variety of a red oak. We've seen some really good response and growth to those. One of my favorite trees that I don't know that I would recommend planting is a Bodark. And I really love the wood that you get from that. It's such a tough. And then the really unique fruit that it produces, the big horse apples. So those are my two trees.
Okay, and Ross Hosea?
Yeah, so everyone loves oaks, and so the oak that I most commonly recommend is the Mexican white oak, or more commonly known locally as the Monterey oak. It is a great, great tree, grows fairly fast for an oak. It's one of the fastest growing species we have, gets nice and tall, produces lots of shade. It's got a more slim canopy, not like the live oak, so it can be planted, you know, around streets and places like that where you have confined space.
And Mark Cruzing.
The cottonwood. So I spent a lot of time down in Rockport after Hurricane Harvey, and there's many times when I saw a 70 or 80 foot cottonwood tree still standing after Hurricane Harvey and a live oak that was knocked over. Since then, I've really keyed into that species, and I've seen it growing up in the Burney, up in the hill country. You'll find some really rocky, really dry sites, and you'll see a cottonwood there. You'll see them planted around town, and it'll be 70 or 80 feet tall. And by the way, the Alamo is named after the cottonwood tree.
So no one said pecan. So what's up with pecan trees? Because I think they're great.
No, I love the pecan. It's our state tree. And it's unfortunate that we don't plant more of those, especially in neighborhoods where we know that they have grown and can grow. It's one of the trees that once it reaches a certain age, it's susceptible to having unpredictable limb failure. And I think people really get nervous about that. And that's where we see a lot of improper pruning practices, because people overreact when a limb falls. If you're properly maintaining your tree throughout its life, from planting through its maturity, then you shouldn't have a whole lot of those issues. Of course, you can't predict storms and the impacts of that, but pecan is a beautiful tree, and it gives us fruit.
Yeah, it gives us pecans. And Rosso, if you're going to plant a pecan, not next to the house, but away from the house.
Yeah, make sure you have plenty of room for it. Pecans do get big. Now, they're not really fast growing, but with proper care, they will grow at a moderate rate. But make sure you have plenty of room, plenty of width, because they do get very, very large.
All right. And Laurie, let's go to Laurie on the phones. Hey, Laurie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I live in the hill country. I have very little topsoil, and underneath my topsoil is caliche. When I'm planting a native tree, do I bring in dirt to add to the hole and around it, or do I put any additives into the hole or fertilizer for a native tree that I'm planting in caliche?
All right, Laurie, thanks for that great question. And Mark Cruzy.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing that I've had pretty good success with doing is exactly that, Laurie, is actually adding soil onto the site. So I kind of do it by buckets. So I'll use maybe 40 to 50 gallons of actual topsoil that I'll actually pour onto a site, kind of compact it somewhat, and then I'll actually plant my tree on top of that and mulch it. And I've had pretty good success doing that on really, really hard sites.
But does that make the tree, will it grow out of that hole into the surrounding area and become secure in place, or will it just stay in that area where the hole was dug?
So one of the kind of interesting things about trees is really kind of how shallow their actual root system is. So after they actually break out of that kind of mound, so to speak, and they get in that really shallow soil, they don't need that much depth to actually grow. And especially up in the hill country, you've got cracks in the soil, so the root can actually kind of go downwards to find, you know, the air that it needs or any kind of soil that it needs down in that area. So shallow is absolutely fine for root systems.
Okay, let's go to Bob on the phones. Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I live in Kerrville, and we have about an acre and a half with live oaks that have managed to survive oak wilt. We're doing everything we can to maintain a native environment, grasses particularly, Indian grass, blue stems, and whatnot, but I've got an invasion of crabgrass around a brace of live oaks, and I'm wondering what herbicides, if any, I might be able to use to control or abate that invasion. It's horrible stuff.
Ooh, any ideas? Who wants to take that question? Let's go to Ross. You get drafted.
So generally speaking, we're always very, very cautious about putting any type of herbicides around trees because they can take it up. So I would absolutely make sure anything you use, I don't know of any off the top of my head that I would particularly use, but I would just be careful that it's something that following the labeled instructions, that's not going to be harmful to those trees. That's not going to be something that's systemic that's going to get taken up by that tree.
So if I make like a mixture of the vinegar type stuff, garden vinegar, and hit the crabgrass with that, and then it won't affect anything else?
I don't know but that particular species that well to know how it'll affect it, but the vinegar, the organic methods can work in some cases, especially in the heat of the summer. But on that particular one, I don't know. I would strongly urge you to reach out to your extension specialist. They should be able to give you some information out there in Kerrville to be able to kind of guide you on specifically how to manage that particular species.
Your best weed controlling method is your lawnmower. Just keep mowing, you know.
Don't let it seed.
Yep, don't let it go to seed. Let's go to Victor on the phones. Victor, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question about, you know, I know the city's always concerned about tree savings and all this stuff that have, you know, laws, regulations. I was concerned over at the San Jose Burial Park. My parents are interned there, and I noticed that they have all these, oak trees, gigantic trees, and there's a big infestation of, I guess, the ball moss. And I was just wondering if anything, I know they don't do or see anything that they do about it, if there's anything that can't be done about it, because there are so many hundreds of trees out there. They're gigantic, and it's just a shame that a lot of them are dying. So That's my question, and I'll take comments off the air.
All right, Victor, thank you for that call. So the ball moss, it grows on the trees. And so, Mark Bird, what is that doing to the trees?
So ball moss, and I know there's people out there that know this, is not a parasite. It can grow to populations that can inhibit growth of trees. But it's not a parasite, so it's not feeding off the tree.
Like mistletoe is a parasite.
Mistletoe is a parasite. It puts a sinker in, and it actually draws nutrients from a tree. Ball moss attaches itself, and it seems like it. If you've ever picked up that dead limb, that dead twig that had ball moss in, you cannot pull it off because it's got those tentacles that have attached itself to the tree. It's like a barnacle. Barnacle isn't feeding off the boat or the pier or whatever it's attached to. It's just that's how it attaches itself. It's an air plant. So underneath the canopy of those beautiful trees, the tree acts as an umbrella that actually captures the moisture that the moss is able to feed off. So it's in a perfect environment. The tree limbs that you find often dead are the limbs that have already shaded and died out. So,
all right, let's go to Pam. Hey, Pam, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks. Does the A&M website address which trees our plantings are poisonous, because we had to remove all of our old, beautiful sago palms because of a new puppy.
Oh, wow. So are there certain trees that are poisonous to dogs? Mark Cruzy?
Yes. So that's another concern. So there is, I would definitely recommend whenever you add a shrub or even a grass or any kind of, obviously, a tree to your property to really do some pretty thorough research on what it produces and if it is toxic to on certain animals. So there's many, many good websites out there. Another one that I'd recommend is it's called Texas Tree Identification. And on that website, it has basically a fact sheet of different Texas species. And it does identify certain species that can be problematic for dogs, especially dogs.
Mark Bird, tell me about the San Antonio Tree Ordinance. If I have a tree on my house and I want to get rid of it, or what do I need to know?
So for a single-family residential where construction is complete, you do not need a permit to remove a tree on your property. If you're going to develop a property, you would need to submit an application. You'd also be inside the city limits submitting a building application that goes with that. So where I live, my house, and my neighborhood, I can cut down all my trees without a permit. David, you can go cut your trees down without a permit.
All right. And Ross, what are we doing to encourage people to plant more trees?
Yeah, so we have lots of efforts here in the city. We know we're a growing city. We know we're losing trees. So we use the funds that come that Mark was talking about from the developmental ordinance, from the preservation ordinance, and we use that to provide trees at lots of adoption events. We do over 50 a year where we provide free trees to the public. They can come out to an event. We have all types of partnerships with CPS Energy, the Green Shade Rebuild Program Mark talked about. We do planting efforts through our neighborhood tree program. Lots of things where we're doing over 10,000 trees a year.
Come to Arbor Day. We are having a tree adoption there.
All right. Arbor Day is November the 2nd. There will be tree adoptions and other great fun with trees here in San Antonio. Thank all of our guests, Mark Bird, Mark Cruzy, Ross Hosea, and I'm David Martin Davies with Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.